too close for me? Too far? All right.
We're doing this the old school way. Welcome to St. Augustine this evening, or as the great and all-powerful Pete Melfi likes to call it, the Mike Davis Show. And I don't argue with the guy who started, runs, owns, and is a genius with the 904 Now app. So, Pete, thanks for naming the show for me, because I'm not very creative, and I wouldn't have thought of it myself. So I do appreciate it. We got a great guest with us tonight. Amanda's here. Amanda, say hello to everybody. All right. And Amanda, your mic is still just a tad low in here. I think Clay yells so much that they have to turn the mic down in the morning.
How's that?
Still low.
Okay.
So we're good. All right, we'll get it. We'll get you. So want to thank all of our sponsors for today's show, starting with Ward Medical Services. They are St. Augustine's only local and family-owned medical equipment and supply company. They have been in business for over 20 years. They've won the Best of St. Augustine for so many years, they just retired it in their name. They specialize in home sleep therapy products, home oxygen, wheelchairs, and just about all the things you need to stay safe at home and recover at home. For all of your safety supplies, call them first at 904-794-9600 or stop by and see Earl Ward and his staff in the Save-A-Lot Plaza on US 1 South. They are directly behind the McDonald's. Go see them. They're great folks. Every time I've ever needed anything, they have been absolutely amazing. And Earl is a great, great guy. He's going to sit in here and co-host with us in the next week or so. So we're working on getting Earl back in. And Hebert Kresge & Associates, they're a full-service local CPA firm with a team of skilled professionals dedicated to providing top-level service in the areas of tax compliance, planning for businesses, estates, individuals, and trusts. They also can handle any audits, reviews, or accounting services you may need. And if you need a business evaluation, forensic analysis, or litigation support, Hebert Kresge can handle that as well. You can reach him at 904-460-0747 or at HebertKreskeCPA.com. And Carmella's Pizzeria, it's locally owned and operated by the Tringali family. They have an amazing brick oven pizza. It's so good. It's New York style. They also have salad, subs, wings, and so much more. They offer dine-in, takeout, and delivery through both Bite Squad and Grubhub, and their staff is just amazing when you're down there. You go in, get out, get your pizza. It's wonderful. And South State Bank, there are bankers, but if you need a team of bankers, it's a group of bankers that you can count on, South State's your bank. Their approach to building long-term relationships with their customers is the best in the business, and if you're looking for a banking relationship you can depend on, check out South State Bank. They've got three locations in St. Augustine to serve you, one on State Road 16, one on State Road 312, and my favorite, the branch over at the beach, or you can visit their website at southstatesbank.com. They are a member of the FDIC. All right, so tonight we got a very special guest for those of you that love turtles. We have the Turtle Whisperer, the Beachmaster, the man who knows everything turtle, Bob Fraser. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mike.
And you've been doing this for how long?
This is about 10 years now.
About 10 years. Yeah. How did you get started being the Turtle Whisperer?
Guys, 2012 when we moved to St. Augustine, yep. And my neighbor was a sea turtle veterinarian. Mm-hmm. He's one who told me there was like sea turtle patrols in the area. And so I just started, we were living on the beach at that time, so I would just start walking out like 2 a.m., 3 a.m. I'm like, I'm going to see a turtle. So I'd start going out at night, and then I met the people out there on the beach that were doing it, and then I joined them, and then after a few years, I just started taking over the
first time they found you, like, what are you doing walking out here at 2 a.m.?
Yeah, I got that.
Did you get that? Why are you out here? What are you doing?
Yeah, what are you doing with our nest?
Yeah,
I got that for sure.
Yeah, it's like, why do you have that bucket? No, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
That's how it started. Yeah, and just kind of snowballed from there. And like anything else, you just get your foot in the door and then you run with it.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, you enjoy doing it. What section of the beach are you patrolling?
So, for me, I do St. Augustine Beach, which runs from the southern boundary of Anastasia State Park, mm-hmm. right there at Pope Road by Embassy Suites, and that's all the way down to Crescent Beach, just about 7 miles of beach. And then I've done some of the other areas like Volano and South Ponte Vedra Beach when they're doing like renourishment projects.
Mm-hmm. So how long does it take you to ride that at night? And are you riding it every night?
At night, I would just go out and walk.
Okay.
Now, you know, if you're going by guidelines, you can only start 30 minutes before sunrise. So when I'm actually doing like the actual patrol or the survey, you know, I'm not going to start that until when I ride the beach will be 30 minutes. And, you know, the sunrise changes every day. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's, you know, up until the summer solstice, it's a minute earlier each day. And then after that, a minute later. So, you know, like the earliest you can go is about 5:50 a.m. And now I'm about starting at 6:20.
Slacker.
I know.
You're such a slacker.
I'm still getting up at the same time.
Uh-huh. But, you know. No, as a surfer, I get up. I mean, surfers are amateur meteorologists, right? We know all the stuff about meteorology, and we think we're smart about it. But
yeah, I see them all.
Yeah, we're all out there. We're all trying to figure out the tide, the wind direction, the swell period, right? All of this stuff that really matters until...
It's a different culture. I don't know how you do it because I see you guys out there just before sunrise. It's still dark.
Yeah.
And things with teeth like to eat.
I'm not a big surfing while dark guy.
They like to get out there. I see them because they like to... I think they just like I said, it's a different culture. They just like to get out there and watch the sunrise. And they're just kind of... being out there on the water.
Yeah, I'm all in for the sunrise. Yeah. And about 30 minutes after the sunrise, I figure the things with teeth have had enough to eat and they've gone.
Then you're safe.
I hope.
Right.
Yes.
Or more people in the water.
Yeah, there's so more
statistically,
people.
You're a little bit better.
Yeah, I just don't have to be the luckiest guy. I just don't have to be the unluckiest guy. Right? So, yeah, you just don't want to be that guy.
You don't have to be that one in a thousand.
Yeah, don't be that one guy. So what else do you see early in the morning?
You know, for me, it's when I go early in the morning, when I'm walking early, it's really... more about it's just like my zen time watching the meteors or you know when you have a nice good rocket launch in the morning that's nice. As far as wildlife, you're not going to really see that much because it's dark. You know, the birds really aren't out. You know, turtles, you know, I'll come across a turtle every now and then, and that's usually what I'm hoping to come across.
Yep.
The other things I might see are just other people, and then sometimes you wonder, like,
pull that mic just a little closer to you, man. Are we good on sound?
Yeah, we just need him to pull his mic.
Okay, all right, there we go.
Yeah,
Bobo's already was telling you. So if you go out and see Bo, and you don't pull the mic close,
I just watched that.
Yeah, I know.
I just watched that earlier today.
I know. what's the? There's a lot of animals in the dunes.
Yeah,
that people don't realize. I mean, there's deer out there. There's all kinds of other.
Yeah.
What have you seen going, I mean, like, in the beach in the morning? You're like, well, I didn't expect to see that on the beach.
I think it's not going to be bizarre at all. A snake, and I mean, we can see snakes in the dunes.
Yeah.
That's not, you know, nothing crazy.
Yep.
But you know how the beach can get at low tide. Sometimes when you're at dead low, it's way down there. And to see, like, a corn snake right at the water's edge, that wasn't, like, the norm.
Yes.
And, you know, it wasn't. Threatened, but I just assume that's like a bird had dropped it, you know, had a little laceration on its tail. Mm-hmm. But as far as weird things out there, the weirdest thing out there is people.
People.
Yeah.
We're in weird. Various
states of.
Yes. You know, surfing and non-surfing and sleeping and camping on the beach.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Maybe not sleeping, but camping on the beach.
Ravers.
Yes.
With their glow sticks.
So what's the turtle nesting like this year? Good year, bad year?
So far, this is a record year. You know, and the season starts May 1st and then runs through October 31st. Usually the turtles will start coming up maybe late April. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not going to follow the same calendar as you and I.
Yep.
So even though it starts May 1st, they don't know that. So, but usually June is peak season and then July, you know, it's like a bell curve, but by the time July 4th rolls around. After July 4th, it's a steep drop-off. And then they just trickle in. And now we're looking at, now that it's August, we're getting a few stragglers come in. And that will extend the season kind of into October.
But you know when all those, how long does it take a nest from the time they lay their eggs till the eggs hatch?
It's about 60 days. That's a general rule of thumb. You know, but that's temperature dependent. So, you know, if you're not having a lot of rains and it's hotter, then the sand is hotter. It's going to incubate faster. So we can have a nest hatch anywhere, you know, from, you know, 50 days, that's real early, but maybe 53, 54, 55 days becomes an average. But if you get a lot of rain and it starts to cool down, then you get into that maybe 58, 59, 60. I've had some go 61, 62.
But they're all in that kind of...
They're all in that little time frame, except the big ones, right? The leatherbacks, the ones that look like a VW bug. they go about 10, 20 days longer.
Okay.
So we can go to 60 days with most nests, and those go about 80 days.
And do you know from the type of track going up what kind of nest it is?
Yeah. Each turtle's got its own distinctive crawl.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, you know, here, 95% of all our nests are loggerheads. And so it has an alternating gait. So you can just look at it almost like a bipedal person, right? A person, just one flipper in front of the other. The greens and the leatherbacks, they have a simultaneous gait where both flippers are moving at the same time. But, you know, if the crawl is wider than you, if you can lay across that crawl, that's a leatherback.
That's a leatherback.
Yeah, it's easy to tell on that one.
So is there a time of the month that they're more typically, or is it just any time? Is it full moon, new moon?
I knew you were going to ask that. That's a question we get all the time, mostly for hatchlings.
Yep.
Although that, you know, you hear it all the time. Oh, the hatchlings like coming out on the full moon. And that's just a myth. I mean, they come out.
It's 60 days to 60 days, right?
Right, right. Yeah. And it's just like, you know, when your wife was ready to give birth to her kids, they...
Well, the moon cycle is on a 28-day cycle, so no matter what, yeah. They're not coming out on the same
time. And sometimes, you know, the moon is up during the day.
Yeah.
And so, you know, whether it's full or not, that, you know, you can have a full moon, but if it's during the day, that doesn't make the night any brighter.
Yeah.
You know? So, but usually it's like when the temperature kind of cools down and drops, then those turtles know when to come out. They know it's more that evening time, right? Because the temperature has dropped down and made things, the sand has gotten cooler, the air has gotten cooler, and then they come out. But what time? People ask that all the time, and there's no set time. Yeah. You know, it's 8:37, 4:11, you know, 5:22, whatever.
Make up whatever time you weren't there.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a watch pot never boils. And people go out there all the time waiting to see something like that. And it's, I don't know what to tell you. It's not going to happen when you think it is.
And almost all of them hatch at night. I mean, very rarely. I would imagine.
Almost all. I mean, sometimes, you know, early evening.
Mm-hmm.
I know last year, for whatever reason, we had quite a few, you know, in that 5 to 7 o'clock hour, you know,
okay.
Those 2 hours, we had a few emergences. But for the most part, yeah, it's going to be middle of the night sometime.
And how many nests do we have now, total county and kind of in your area or your area and total county?
Wide, we're at 1,100, just over 1,100. Mm-hmm. And then and on St. Augustine Beach, which is a little bit different than the rest of the county, I have 45. And the strange thing, if, for lack of a better word, about St. Augustine is I think I have the second longest stretch of beach in the county as far as the turtle patrols go. And I only account for 4% of the total nest in the county. Like St. Augustine Beach proper is very low density. And probably, you know, because it's a very touristy area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you were to drive down Ponte Vedra Boulevard in Ponte Vedra, you have those big houses, then you have the boulevard there. So it's just one house. But if you're on St. Augustine Beach, all those houses you see, that you got a whole block between there and A1A.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you have a lot of that urban glow. So well, I think the turtles are looking for that darker stretch of beach.
When you've also got a lot of traffic, right? So for years and years and years, the beach was driven on.
Yeah.
And for years, you didn't have conservation efforts to save the turtles.
Right.
So probably the place that they were harvested, one of the easiest was St. Augustine back when you were eating turtle eggs, right? So
I hear that. If I had a dollar for every time I had one of the older locals say it makes the best pound cake. I mean, that's
the saying, it makes the best pound cake.
Ask any turtle person, they'll tell you they have heard that.
Really?
And from what I would hear, like what they would do is they would just get on the beach at night and drive from like St. Augustine to Daytona and mm-hmm. just scrape, you know, like a dozen eggs off of each, you know, each nest site.
Yep.
You know, they come and find them when they're nesting. You take them fresh. And obviously, I'm not condoning that. And you know, no one does that anymore that we know of.
And we were on, Darcy and I were walking a Southwest beach, and they'd had a tropical storm come through in the middle of turtle nesting season.
Yeah.
So it cut the beach by about 2 feet, 3 feet. Mm-hmm. And we walked past, this is a heavy turtle beach as far as nesting sites. And I bet we walked past 20, 30 nests that were basically sheared in half.
Yeah.
And between the birds and the raccoons and everything else, and you're just walking by just going, man, that's just devastating to that turtle population this year because it just wiped out a bunch of nests.
Yeah, and that's, you know, after July 4th, like we were just talking earlier, so you have that 60-day incubation. And, you know, after July 4th, that's putting you into, you know, like August, September time for that to emerge. Well, you know, Floridian, right? If the storms come, usually the nor'easters and the hurricanes are usually around that, you know, August time.
Yep.
And so we kind of figure that anything after July 4th is really kind of in danger of not making it because of those storms.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's nature. Are we going to get a lot of storms this year? Are we not? It's
you don't know, right? I mean, you don't know. You know, as that surf report, you used to be able to count nor'easters the first week of September.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It was just like a guarantee. And there have been years that there were no nor'easters in September.
And they do so much more damage than hurricanes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just coastal.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, coastal
erosion. Yeah, because they just sit out there for like 5 days and you're just constantly getting that that storm surge. And that's and so, you know, those nests can handle what they call washovers. Like, you know, sometimes you get a king tide and it washes over a nest and that's okay. They can survive that. Mm-hmm. But if you put it underwater for 5 days, that nest is bust. You know, it's just not going to make it.
And how many turtle eggs are normally in a nest?
I mean, general rule of thumb is about 100. I mean, it varies a little bit, you know, per species. Leatherbacks, the big ones, usually a little bit less than 100. Loggerheads a little bit more. Greens a little bit more than that. Those are the three main turtles we have here, right? The loggerhead, which is 95% of our turtles. Then the green sea turtles, and then leatherbacks. And they usually kind of come up in that, not in that order, but leatherbacks are usually the first turtles will come up, you know, we see in the season. Greens are usually late. And so any turtles we see around this time of year, usually a green or some straggler loggerheads.
And so when the turtles come out, right, one of the big things for years, I'm a contractor and they're, you know, they'll say, well, it's the lights in the houses, right, that will disorientate the turtles. So is that, how bad is that?
You know, in certain parts of the beach, it's worse than other. Like, for instance, the pier area is bad for me. And it's not all houses. I mean, those are your, you know, you're not going to see that disorientation until the morning, right? And so, you know, if it's daylight out, you don't see what lights were on during the night. Now, sometimes I'll walk out at night just to see what's going on. But you can look and see what's the probable cause, you know. And it's going to be, you know, in that area, you got the pier, you got residential homes, you have the hotels, and then being in that pier area and tourist part of the town, there's people on the beach at all hours of night. So they're using flashlights, you know. A lot of it is chasing crabs. I don't know what the big thing is, but I think all the people from the Midwest have never seen a live crab. So they're constantly chasing crabs. But then, you know, from a turtle's perspective, you just see these lights flashing all around. And when they emerge, that's their signal. What they go to is they're looking for that starlight coming off, you know, shimmering off the ocean or something like that. That's how they know to go towards the ocean. So you put all these artificial lights, like flashlights or their cell phone lights, and they start going in that direction. The houses do make a big thing because it's also the urban glow, right, from the town. So if it's just drowning out starlight and stuff like that, they don't know which direction to go. So certain parts of the beach are worse than others. And it's just, you know, if the more populated it is, the more light pollution you're going to have.
And I would think the Volano Beach area up in the South Ponte Vedra, because again, you're just talking about a couple of houses near that nest and it's a lot darker up there, right?
It is that. And Summer Haven's good too. Crescent Beach even is, you know, once you get to Crescent Beach, it's really one home and then A1A.
Yeah.
It's really St. Augustine. It's just, you know, that stretch I do, it's just, it's not just one house on the beach. It's multiple. So that really kind of, I think that's why our numbers are lower than everybody else's.
Well, and you said 1,100 nests. So in a normal year, what's a normal year?
I was kind of going back about the 2009, and it's so, it fluctuates heavily because not all turtles will nest every year. So sometimes it's every other year or every 2 or 3 years. So if you were to look at like a graph, you know, 1 year's up, 1 year's down, 1 year's up, 1 year's down. But that trend is still increasing, right? So you still have that net positive movement. But, you know, like I've seen where in 2000, 2009, I think it was only like 200 nests. And I think, but what I've looked in about the last 10 years, I think our average is 700. So we're at 1,000, which is,
yeah.
In 2019, we had 1,000 as well. But those are the only 2 years that we've gone over 1,000. And that's considered low if you're talking statewide. You know, Northeast Florida is just not.
It's not as
populated.
Yeah. So when it hit the 200 level, did everybody panic?
I don't know. I wasn't here in 2009.
Was it me?
Well, I was.
So basically, you're claiming all of the success has been since you're here.
I'm pretty, just, much,
pretty much. Since.
I mean, it's not wrong. Statistics. We can make it fitter narrative.
Yep.
Bobby wants to know if the dune getting demolished in Volano affected any nests.
I get this a lot. I was there in 2020 when they were doing the full beach renourishment and what they were doing in South Ponte Vedra this year. I don't think it really affects them, but I'm not 100% for sure because the numbers are, you have to wait. You have to see what is the outcome. And most of those nests during those construction phases, they're moved out of the area.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if I had 50 nests come up or 50 turtles come up and nest in front of that project, then we move all 50.
So how do you move a nest?
You locate the clutch and then you first in, first out, right? You take the top egg and we use a bucket and put it in there, but you try and keep the orientation of the egg.
Okay.
The same, just after a period of time, you know, there's at some point in the development of the egg where it'll attach to the yolk, will attach to the wall. And if you shift it, it becomes, you know, dislodged from there. And that's the lifeline. So then it just becomes a rotten egg, basically. So when we move them, we just, you know, you take it and then the whatever's on the top would be at the bottom of your bucket. So then when you move it to a new spot, you're basically putting it back in that order. So now the top of those eggs in your bucket go down the bottom of the clutch just the way it was. And then just, you know, wait, bury it back up just like you would. You know, you try and replicate. So, you know, you can measure the depth of that clutch.
Mm-hmm.
Just say it's 18 inches. Well, then when you dig a hole, you dig a hole about 18 inches. So you try and keep it the same. But as far as relocation, it's only for, you know, like these projects. Like a normal turtle coming up to lay on a nest, like on our beach, which is a driving beach.
Mm-hmm.
In San Jose. So if it lays in the driving lane, we still don't move it. The county will come and put some cones around it. They'll adjust the driving lane, and you just have to drive around it.
In four-wheel drive.
Don't drive.
Don't drive beach without four-wheel drive.
Don't bring your RV.
Don't bring a car that can't do four-wheel drive down
there. I've seen the RV on there.
You think is a four-wheel drive.
Yeah, if you saw a big plume of black smoke last year from the beach.
Yeah.
Someone brought an RV on there and just burned out the motor and burned the whole thing down. But like you're saying,
$1 million RV.
Like you said, what's the craziest thing you see? I mean, when it comes to animals are fine.
People
are the one that do the crazy thing. But to answer that question, I don't think that like when they tear these dunes down or to rebuild them, I don't see the negative. The only negative is you're just disrupting the natural process. You know, but I don't have the data to say, okay, well, you know, we moved X amount and this is how many survived. But I have found from those relocation, you still run about the same success, about 80%.
Hatch.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, you know, there's all these stories because there's 100 eggs roughly in a nest. How many of those survived the first couple of years?
Well, the rule of thumb is 1 in 1,000 make it to maturity.
Okay.
You know, so if you were to look at it this way, like but St. Augustine, where I have a low density beach. So let's just say I got 50 nests, right?
Yep.
Maybe five of those will ever make it. Not five nests, five hatchlings will make it to adulthood.
Wow.
Out of those, you know, 5,000 eggs.
So where do the turtles that breed here, right? That have all their nests, where do they go after they leave? I mean, because St. Augustine's not the warmest place during the wintertime at 59 degree water temp.
Right. Well, I mean, they travel distantly. Like the leatherbacks may go a little bit further north.
Mm-hmm.
I know they've been seen off of Canada, and I can't imagine it's that.
That's got to be warmer. Cold.
But so they move around. But
I didn't know they had insulated shells.
Yeah, well, that's that big, thick, rubbery one. And that's why it's called leatherback. It feels like a fat, you know, cap, like a leather cap, but just, I guess it's insulated. Because, yeah, I can't imagine. You know, because they're reptiles, so they, you know, they're cold blooded. They need that warm temperature to keep the body regulated.
Yeah, so
I can't imagine being up there in colder water.
No,
but they do.
And then how far south?
Oh, God, you can go all the way down to South America. I mean they're found worldwide, but you know, temperate. But
yeah,
you know, like you know, down the Caribbean, there's a good number. Costa Rica, you know, if you're talking about the Gulf of Mexico. In the States, not as many on the Gulf of Mexico, but when you get down to, like, Mexico, it's got a pretty good population on both sides of the coast, actually, on the Pacific and the Gulf.
And so the 1,000 nests,
yep.
Very few of them will survive.
Right.
And then out of those, they do come back to the same beach to nest. That's the theory. Is that
it holds true for the most part. So what we've been doing since 2016, there's a PhD in Georgia, University of Georgia, Dr. Shamblin. I hope I'm saying his last name correctly. We send him one egg from each. We take one egg from each loggerhead nest, not the greens, not the leatherbacks, from the loggerheads. We take one nest or one egg from one nest, and then he does a DNA study. So he takes the shell, extracts the DNA, which is all maternal DNA. So you have to take, and people ask, and you know, you have to do it from the beginning because that's all maternal DNA. If you take it afterwards, you know, after a turtle has emerged, then it has embryonic DNA attached to it. So it's just a harder process to separate that out. But you know, we can look at something. I can get something back, and I can say, oh, my nest 17 is Villano's nest 28.
Okay.
And so, you know, I've had a turtle nest in South Carolina, and then 2 weeks later, nest here. That's an outlier.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, generally speaking, from what that DNA shows is it's still a, you know, maybe like a, I would say like a 20-kilometer range where they, you know, they come back. In that area, just because it's, you know, people will think, oh, it's nested by the pier. It's going to come back here, you know, next year or 2 years from now. And it's not coming right back to the pier.
Is it one nest per turtle per season? Or can, what? I mean, I can.
Oh, no. They do, some of them will do one, but average about four clutches per season.
So one turtle might be responsible for four nests on the beach. Okay, right. I'm just trying to figure out the math in my head
So when we say there's 1,100 nests, that may not be 1,100 different turtles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're coming back for molts. Some will just do one.
Yep.
And some are going to do three. Some will do
four. See, I'm looking at it going, that's 100 eggs. I'm like, okay, I'm done for the season.
Yeah.
But some of them aren't.
Yeah.
They're like, no, we're good. We'll come back.
It's and it's about every 2 weeks.
Okay.
So that's a fast turnaround time.
Yes.
And so I think I was just reading that not every egg from the clutch would be from the same male turtle. Now you're getting into stuff that I don't know about. but again, that's what the DNA shows.
Yeah.
You know, he can look at this and say, I have four sisters, like full sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a half sister, you know, from that same clutch. And he can, you know, the DNA will tease all that out. Now, I know... there's someone at the Whitney Lab here in St. Augustine who was doing a similar thing, but instead of taking an egg, he's using sand samples.
Yep.
I don't think it's. I mean, apparently it works just as well, but I don't think it's going into effect just yet where we can stop taking an egg, because you know ultimately you'd rather leave that egg there. That's a viable turtle. So if we can do it without sacrifice an egg, then great. But at the moment, I don't have a problem sacrificing one egg because this is where we learn all that information, right? Is how far apart are they nesting? How often are they nesting? You know, what is that range?
Yeah.
And then, again, we can not we, but he can determine, you know, what are full siblings, half siblings, and how far does that lineage go.
And Amanda, I don't know if you know or not, Pop, she went to the prestigious Art Vandelay School of Marine Biology, where she became a dolphin trainer.
Yeah,
dolphin trainer.
Is that what her license plate says?
Yeah, it's his dolphin trainer. Amanda, you got any questions?
I was just looking up, since you mentioned that eggs in the same clutch can have different fathers. I was just looking at sperm storage for, are females capable of sperm competition, basically. And evidently some female turtles are capable of storing sperm so they can hold it until they're ready to ovulate. And then that's how you get the multiple paternity cases in a single clutch.
Yeah. Aren't you glad that that's not the case with us?
Yes, I am. As a matter of fact,
as an egg bearer, I am very glad that I am not responsible for storing sperm inside my body.
I'm No.
It's a whole new capability.
It's not my clutch. Yeah. I'm telling you, it's not my clutch.
I only have to pay half.
I know.
50% child support.
I only have 50% of these eggs. They're not my clutch. That's I mean, there's all kinds of...
to coming into a clutch.
But, you know, another interesting thing about that, not so much about the sperm collection, but the temperature of the nest, of the egg chamber and all that is what determines the sex of the the turtle. So that happens in a lot of reptiles, what they call temperature sex determination. And it's so with turtles, the warmer the nest site or the, you know, the chamber, it's going to produce females. And then usually at the bottom of the clutch where it's a little bit cooler, those are males.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the opposite with alligators.
Yeah.
Same thing. But with turtles, you just think hotter females, cool dudes.
So we just can't take the heat. Go ahead and say it, Amanda.
Yeah.
Hot chicks.
Yes, hot chicks.
Hot chicks.
Hot cool clutches. Dudes.
And they're gonna rule the seas in the world one day with the problem they're having now is with as the average temperature just rises, they're starting to find some clutches are just 100% female.
Okay.
It's just getting warmer out there.
Mm-hmm.
The, you know, the sand. If you have a longer drought period, everything's just warmer. And so, you know, That's a bad thing in the future. You know, you're looking at if you have way more females than males, then, you know, is there enough to sustain that population?
Yeah.
Good time to be a male turtle.
Good time to be a male turtle.
Yeah.
It's a seller's market.
That's right.
No. So that's part of what you do, right? But the other part, you do a lot of permits and stuff along the beach and construction projects and kind of monitoring that as well.
Yeah, I've done a few... you know, it's with all these, the erosion going on the coast. So there's, you know, the renourishment projects. I've done some, I've done the turtles with a couple of projects, and I've done some bird surveys to, you know, out in Summer Haven. I'm doing that currently right now out at Michler's Landing. And I don't see it stopping anytime soon. I know they got projects lined up for next year.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a constant cycle. I mean, it's the storms, those hurricanes from a few years ago just decimated the landscape. Mm-hmm. So now it's trying to, you know, go back and fix that. And as you know, it really is a Band-Aid, right? You put it on there, that first storm rips it right off.
And you'll get a lot of people that are in favor of the beach renourishment, right? That, well, we need that Band-Aid there. We need several layers of the Band-Aid because we have several storms. As a surfer, right, I watch the beach renourishment push the sand all the way to the end of the pier.
Yeah.
Right, and that completely ruins all the sandbars for us. And then it takes years for the sandbars to come back. And then right about the time that they come back, they push all the sand back out to the end of the pier. I mean, there's been beach renourishment projects where the sand has been 10 feet past the end of the pier.
Yeah.
Right? You got to cast that thing pretty far to get into water to catch a fish, right?
I know. You don't have to wait long. It goes away pretty quick. I mean, you're at the seawall now.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just 2018. Mm-hmm. When it went down, at that point, it went to the third piling from the end of the pier. And it didn't take but a year to get, you know, maybe halfway. And now, you know, it's all the way to the seawall.
Well, it was 2012, they were out past the end of the pier.
Yeah.
Right? That was the other one out past the end of the pier. And and for me as a surfer, and I talked to other surfers about it, one of the best sandbars is the sandbar at the end of the pier at low tide. Mm-hmm. Right. That sandbar, when it's there and you're taking off in front of the pier, that's one of the best sandbars there. And we're a little ways away from that. And I'm afraid we're not going to get to that this cycle before they start pushing sand all the way.
Now you're giving the secret spot out.
Yeah. Right now. No, it's okay. It doesn't exist right now. It just doesn't exist. And if you are a surfer, you know that every couple of months, those sandbars are shifting and moving. And someplace that might have been great at low tide is now great at high tide and vice versa.
I see them congregate at different places along that, that stretch. Fourth Street's a good
place. Yes, there's a nice little place right there, too. Yeah, there's some good spots.
So I just gave that one away.
People know.
Locals know for sure.
I'm not going to give you the couple of really fun ones away. I'm not giving those away. No, I'm giving you the ones that everybody knows.
Yeah, where the surf schools go to.
Where the cameras are, right? Because people want to go where the cameras are.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting. Any difference in species of turtle on Volano Beach or farther south? You said most of them are loggerheads.
It's all the same in the county. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're going to get those three. Mm-hmm. And the majority of them are going to be loggerheads. And the second most common would be the greens. Then you have the leatherbacks. We do have, that I'm aware of, there's one Kemp's Ridley, which is out of the seven species of sea turtles, is the rarest. Mm-hmm. And we have one of those in the county. I've seen them in the county before, but, not every year, and if we get one, it's usually just one.
Mm-hmm.
Down in South Florida, I know there's a couple of Kemps down there, and I think there's one Hawksbill that I know of. Not in St. Augustine, but in the state of Florida. Again, you get one or two Hawksbill a year. So there's five species in the state, but three of them are what is the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, what people probably don't realize is Florida makes up 90% of the nest in the United States. So that's why it's important to really kind of practice the conservation efforts here. You as a builder, that's why we need, stuff like we need the lighting ordinances. And there's just no stopping flashlights on the beach.
Yeah.
But, that's... we really need those conservation efforts in place. I mean, that's a big deal.
But when I was a kid, you drove on the beach at night.
Yeah, you could. I mean,
sometimes you drove. Sometimes you're just on the beach at night. But
I've seen that, and you can still drive on at night, but just not during those 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Then they'll close the gates. I've seen someone drive through the gate. So if you
in an RV.
Well, this was like a little. There's the Pontiac Fiero.
Yeah, I do.
I mean, I don't know how it didn't take off the windshield and busted it, but almost made under the.
I always thought it was like a smart car, and they turned it sideways and tried to roll it or push it underneath there. So, not that the smart car was going to make it on the beach. We don't have that at night.
Right.
Which I think is a pretty good conservation effort. And then you mentioned lights. I mean, whenever we're building houses along the ocean or close to the ocean, part of our final inspection is having the turtle lady come out and check all the lighting and make sure that there's no lighting that will distract turtles. And they get on the ground like they're a turtle so they can look up and see.
Right. Yeah, see from their perspective.
You got to see it. They're not like, okay, we're 6 feet tall. They actually look. The first time my superintendent's like, yep, right on the ground, boss, and that's how we did this inspection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like I said, you got to see it from their perspective. But, with that, and I know people want to see that kind of thing, right? They want to be able to see that. But this is going back to flashlights and stuff.
Yeah.
With some of our nests, there are a lot of locals that want to see it. And now it's starting to become a problem where we have people that are watching the nest and they want to sit on those nests because they want to see that what they call a boil, right? When they all come out and they want to see that. They just don't know what time. So they just sit out there all night long. And then, when it does happen.
These are the people that we can't get to go back to work.
Yeah.
I just want you to know, this is where they are. They're out at night for 2 weeks watching turtle nests.
I had a lady retired a couple years ago that extended her vacation. Made her husband drive her son back to Georgia for school. Then he had to turn around and come back and get her because, she wasn't going to miss it. She sat on that nest for 2 days. And she saw it hatch. But, you know, we don't condone that. We don't want you to do that.
Yeah.
It's, you know, let nature take its course.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is if you're sitting on a nest and it hatches like at midnight, you're going to turn on a light because you can't see.
Yeah.
You know, you want to see what that little turtle looks like.
Yep.
And so that's become a problem this year more so than every year. We have a lot of people that are just sitting on the nest because they know the routine. Like, you can go out there and you can.
I know, talking about giving away the secret.
Yeah, I know.
I know. I'm telling you not to give out the surf spots, and you're like, well, it's this many hours and minutes and seconds
after
we put the sign up. Yes.
Well, I'm not giving away specifics.
Okay. All right. Okay.
But no, that has been a problem this year.
Yeah.
We have people just sitting out there with flashlights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't, for me, it's like, I'm okay watching it on the National Geographic.
Well, they got better cameras.
They do. You can actually see everything.
You can see. I mean, if you're standing out there, you know, you're just looking at a shade of black and white, you know, mm-hmm. in the dark. And if you turn your light on, it's creating extra shadows as well. So, you know, unless you pick it up and look at it, which you can't do, you know, it's still an endangered animal. Mm-hmm. There's laws, you know, but, you know, if no one's out there at midnight, no one's out there to police that. And that's, it's just been an issue.
What's their, other than humans annoying them when they hatch, what's their biggest predator?
Probably the ghost crabs.
Okay.
Right? I mean, obviously the seagulls, you know, birds. Mm-hmm. But, I know right now up on the north end of the county, I even saw this morning, there's a fox that runs a dune there. And foxes will just decimate, you know, a nest. I mean, it looks ugly when they get in there. Mm-hmm. But the crabs, you know, they might get in, you know, two or three or one. But that's nature, right? I mean, the crabs got to eat, the foxes got to eat, the birds have got to eat. It sucks seeing it, you know, but that's just part of the life cycle. And again, if you have 100 eggs and you lose 10, mm-hmm. you still got 90 more in there to go. But, you know, if we see that, we can put some screen down to try and protect the clutch.
To keep the animals from getting
in. To keep the like dogs from digging it.
Yeah.
Again, people with pets off leash, and you know the dogs run around at night. Could be during the day, you know, they get it and they smell it and they just start digging.
Labs. They're good diggers.
Yeah,
they'll eat anything too.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I mean, any of those animals, dogs, wolves, coyotes.
Mm-hmm.
I said wolf, but I mean we don't really have wolves here. But the coyotes and the foxes.
Yeah.
We have some coyotes that think that run the beach, too.
Okay.
I've seen them.
Amanda, you've got all kinds of pictures, too, that we picked up from Bob and then from his Instagram page.
Okay.
And the camera, the computers are off facing us.
Okay.
So if you want to click one of those back on. But so you can roll some of that. What's the dumbest thing you've seen somebody out there doing around a turtle nest? Please tell me they haven't built a bonfire on top of it.
I've seen up north they have problems with the bonfires, but here someone kind of dug into it just a little bit, like they just carved out a little thing and then put their McDonald's bag in there. Like I just didn't. What do you say about that?
Did they not know the nest was there, or did they just?
Oh no, you had to know.
You had to know.
I mean, I've seen. I didn't see it, but I came in one morning. Someone had. It only looked like they'd purposely driven over it. You know, because like when you see the tire track goes over it and the stakes are down,
mm-hmm.
but you can tell the car didn't stop because there's no footprints.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like this overnight, I don't know how we got on the beach at night, but the sand is still pure and pristine mm-hmm. from the wind blowing it at night.
Mm-hmm.
And you just see the tire tracks going over it. The stakes are down, no footprints. So you know that was an intentional or drunk.
Drunk, yeah.
And didn't care, but come on, you would have heard the stakes hitting it and going up underneath the car.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I haven't had anybody really destroy a nest. I had someone this year throw away one of our stakes, you know, pulled them out and threw them down and, you know, walked all over it. But for the most part, people are very respectful.
What about the turtles when they come in to lay the eggs?
Well, so there's what they call a false crawl or a non-nesting emergence. And so sometimes you can go out on the beach and you'll see the tracks come up and they just turn around and go back. And that can be for a variety of reasons. It could be that it just didn't like the sand, mm-hmm. whatever. Or maybe there was a lot of rain and the sand's been a little bit compacted and they just can't dig that well. Can be people out there at night and disturbing it.
Yep.
And, you know, you stand in front of it, it's going to turn around and go back into the water. And that has happened. Because I would hear stories. There's a lot of locals out there that are on the beach every day. And so you hear stories from them. Like, so even if I can't be out there, there's someone out there that will mm-hmm. report back.
Yeah.
My number's floating around out there for sure.
Oh, I've been giving it out to everybody.
Oh, I've seen
it. I have been giving that number out.
I've seen it on social
media. It's right next to Jenny in the bathroom. I'm saying. I wrote it there. So the other kind of thinking about that, you've got the turtles coming in. How long does it take them to dig the nest?
You know, I've watched one, and it took about, you know, from start to finish, mm-hmm. I think it took about an hour and a half.
Okay.
You know, that's digging, you know, laying the eggs, and then, you know, covering it back up and then going back out. I mean, I'm sure some of them have taken a couple hours. It's not that, you know, they're so sparse here in our county.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have to be in the right place at the right time. And normally when I am, I'm already catching them. They're already up there.
Yeah.
But the one I did see, I watched her come up, and that was about an hour and a half. So not quick.
And you said you walked the beach. No e-bike.
No. No, I mean, I think that's going to become a problem, you know, if you start running those at night, because people are going kind of fast on those. So either A, you have to put a light on there, which there are lighting ordinances against that.
Mm-hmm.
You can't police it. And then B, the other thing is you're going to run without a light and you might
run right into one.
Hit a turtle, hit a person.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I have seen drunk people passed out on the beach.
Really? Seriously?
I know you're surprised.
That's shocking. Amanda, can you believe that?
Cannot believe it.
What were you doing out there that night, Amanda?
I will not answer that question.
Yeah. Well, usually their clothes are in a different spot.
Uh-huh. I won't answer that question either.
You didn't leave your boot for your broken leg out there? I've seen that.
Well, you know.
Yeah, take it off. Yeah, you know, when they're like a bad ankle or whatever, they wear the boot. That's off in a pile of clothes. They're up in the dunes, passed out.
People, the most dangerous thing.
It is.
People.
Yeah. I've seen someone drag a couch onto the beach and they just left it there. We've had a freezer wash up.
Wait a minute. They left a perfectly good couch?
I didn't get that close to it. I wasn't going to look to see what kind of shape
I'm
it was.
I'm sorry. I'm back to Family Guy when they did the Star Wars thing and they found the couch in the in the garbage can. That's a perfectly good couch. Yeah. So every time I see a couch sitting on the road.
I just think like there was probably people that were renting like a VRBO or Airbnb and just got drunk and brought out there. I had no idea what happened to it. But yeah, stuff washes up all the time. Like a spare propane tank out of there. A freezer washes just one thing I'll tell you. When you said weird, as far as animals go, this happened 2 days in a row. This was about 2 years ago. I had a dead turtle wash up, and it was missing all of its flippers and all of and its head. And so, and it didn't look like, you know, a shark bite or anything like that. It was too clean cut.
Yeah.
And then the next day, the same thing. A different turtle missing its head and flippers in the same spot. I'm sure it happened at the same time. They just washed in.
Washed up differently.
What someone was doing, but that was bizarre.
Yeah, that's I would that's a little creepy.
Yeah,
that's
I don't know what someone's doing with flippers in a head, but
yeah, no. Amanda, you got questions?
I've got an interesting turtle story. When I was in marine mammal bio, we got to do a necropsy on a common dolphin as part of our final project. And the rescue organization that hosted that for us had just done a necropsy on a leatherback. And that leatherback, they discovered, had scoliosis. And so they had saved the shell, which, if you don't know, the spine runs along the shell. So they had saved the shell, and they were doing documentation so they could write it up as a paper. And as far as they knew, that was the first ever leatherback with scoliosis discovered. So it was very funky.
There certainly are mutations,
you know,
and deformities out there.
And then a big bump, and then a spine.
Did you do that local, the marine mammal class?
That was up in Long Island at the Art Vandelay School.
Yes.
Yes.
I've heard of that.
Art Vandelay, Marine Biology, School of Marine Biology, yes. He was also an architect. Most people don't know that, but he was also an architect, yes.
It's true.
So things that if people see something out there, who should they call? We joked about your number being out before, but I mean...
But I know what you're saying. You know, the first thing I would tell people, depending on really what it is, but you have a couple numbers at your disposal. You can always call the non-emergency number for the sheriff's office. Never. I mean, if you see a stranded dolphin, that's, you know, 911's not
good. Not the number to call.
But there's FWC, you know, or Florida Fish and Wildlife Game Commission. They have a number. I think it's 888-404-FWCC.
Mm-hmm. Amanda will have that in 30 seconds, by the way. She's already typing it in.
Yeah. I think that's 404-3922.
Okay.
And then you could call the county beach office, and, you know, they'll direct. I mean, I would say the county's not your first choice. But for like a whale, a turtle, any kind of wildlife on the beach, your first call really should be the FWC, and then they'll dispatch that out to, you know, whoever needs to respond, whether it's the law enforcement officers or whether it's like a marine mammal rescue. You know, if it's a sea turtle, they have our numbers, whoever's on that particular stretch of beach.
Did you see the shark that washed up in Flagler County last week?
No, but I've seen numerous.
Oh, it had a huge bite out of the back of the tail. It was like a 6 or 7 6 foot black tip that.
I mean, the other year we had just half a shark.
Yes.
You know, and you're like, well, someone ate the other half.
I know. So, I know. It makes you a little
nervous. Manatees I've seen with bites in them. We had a big leatherback is the only turtle I haven't seen in the wild.
Yeah.
Like come up at night. I mean, that's still my bucket list. But I have seen one that washed up and it had the primary cause of death would just be, you know, one of those big ships that just the propeller going across the back. But the fins were just tore up by, you know, had a bunch of shark bites, small bites, but that unmistakable little half circle.
Yeah.
So I've definitely watched way too much Shark Week
this summer. Watched way too much.
And so FWC also has a different number for fish kill. Like, so if you're out there, and we know, right, when the shrimpers start running, there's always that early July or late June where all the fish just wash up.
Well, you've got that, and then in about another 3 weeks is the mullet run.
Yeah.
Right? That mullet run is, I've joked all the time that there was a day that was just epic, and we were sitting there in front of what is now the Embassy Suites, me and another construction worker, and the school of fish was about the size of a city block.
Yeah.
So you know there's stuff out there, and we were in the middle of the school of fish. But every few minutes, this epic wave would roll through that was the best wave you'd surfed all year long. You're like, hey, I think we should go in, Pete. What do you think? Yeah, we should probably go in.
Yeah.
Catch a long wave, come all the way back out. Maybe after this one, Pete, right? Yeah. You're like, you know you're risking it, but it's just the...
You're in the food source.
You were in the middle of the food source, and the waves were just so good. You're like, I can't leave.
Only once have I been out there and seen the water like crystal clear. Do you ever... That was while you're surfing out there?
Actually, yes. It was right off the end of the... It was the south side of the pier. And it was one day. It was very unusual because you could almost see all the way to the bottom.
Yeah.
It was so clear. And that doesn't happen here often.
Not at all.
And I paddled for a wave, and I missed the wave. So I had churned up the top of the water. I had turned around to paddle back out, and I felt something bump and lift the back of my board. And before I could turn or decide I wanted to turn to take a look at what was back there, the dorsal fin came up right in front of my board, followed by this big tail swoosh and out to sea this shark went.
Yeah.
And all my friends were looking at me, and I went, I'm done today. Yeah. I'm in. That's it. I'm going in. See you guys.
I didn't get struck by lightning.
I didn't get struck. I was really close, but I didn't, and I'm heading in.
I'm sure it's happened more than once. I saw a few years ago where the water was just crystal clear, and I remember I couldn't believe it where I waded out there, and I was like chest deep water, and I could still see my feet. That never happens here. Well, I heard someone was spear fishing off the pier.
Well, so my daughter lives in Australia.
Yeah.
And there the water's crystal clear. So she doesn't like surfing here because she can't see what's in the water. Mm-hmm. When I go places when it's crystal clear, it takes me a while to adjust to seeing things in the water, right? It's like, I don't know it's there. I can't see it. I feel a little bit better, right? And it's blind, too. It can't see me either. But, you get, I've been down in Costa Rica and look down, and all you'll see is giant stingrays underneath you.
Yeah.
And you just see the eyes, right? You can see the eyes, and then you go, okay, that's the eye. That's the rest of it. There's the tail. And then you're wondering, what is it magnified by, right?
Yeah.
It can't really be that big down there, but they're good size.
Yeah, they're big down there.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, there's always something bigger.
Yes. Yes, there is always something bigger. And that's the thing that makes you worried about all of this water sports. There's always something bigger. Doesn't matter what water you're in, there's always something bigger.
I never get to go in, though. I'm usually, when I'm done with the beach, I'm like, I'm burned out. I want to, you know, I'm out there 7 days a week. And then when the sun comes up, it's people.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, all right, time to go.
Well, I'm a big surfer, but I'm not a big beach guy.
Yeah.
And my Darcy drives her nuts. She's like, can we go sit on the beach today? I'm like, okay, I'll try. I'll do my best. Well, but you go to the beach all the time. Yeah, but I'm surfing. And when I'm done surfing, I get in the car and I come home. Yeah. Right? It's just, it's a different, sitting there is, it's harder for me to do.
It's harder when people are out there. It's just too much. And it's just, it's so crowded here.
Bobby from memory is giving you the St. John's County Sheriff's Office number in the comments.
Yeah.
Yeah, from memory.
Yeah, I don't know it. I don't.
Bobby's got it. It's 824-8304, but it is in the comments. So thanks, Bobby. Yeah. Now, so any other words for people out there? We got about 2-3 minutes.
You know, I think another problem that we really have on the beach, and this is, it's again, you can't police it, and it's hard to stop people from having fun, but I think the big thing, and this goes along any coastal town, they'll tell you, when people are out there, and you see it as you surf out there, when you go out there, people dig these massive holes, and just to sit in them, and then they leave it there.
Mm-hmm.
And you've probably seen pictures that of those viral photos of turtles that are in, that fall in there, the mama turtles fall in there, and they can't get out, they're upside down, or the hatchlings fall in the deep hole and can't get out, and then, you know, they're just being picked off by birds or crabs, whatever. So, you know, in the people in, I guess, in the turtle community, they always say just keep it clean, dark, and flat.
Yeah.
You know, keep the trash off the beach.
Well, the trash is a big thing, right? You want, some people, I think, do a great job of picking up trash on the beach.
Yeah.
There's always that one person that makes it hard on everybody else who's trying to keep the beach clean.
I don't want to say what beach, but there are some that's really bad with just leaving stuff out, you know, and if, like, there'll be like a case or two of beer and all the cans around, you just think, you know, if you hauled all that stuff in there, haul it out.
Yeah.
It's not that difficult.
Yep.
But I guess after you drink a case of beer, you're not
really worried about the
beer
anymore.
You can't count the cans.
You're trying to figure out where your boot is and where you left that,
exactly.
Right? From when you injured your foot.
That's right. That's right. So, yeah, just keep it clean, dark, and flat.
Yeah. Clean, dark, flat.
That's it.
All right. Amanda, anything else?
That is a great way to end it, I think.
All right. How much time we got?
Just about wrapping up.
All right. Tomorrow night, if they show up, it will be the most epic election selection night. Dylan Rumrell and Bo Bozard are coming in so we can handicap the races before people go to vote. Are you ready, Amanda?
I am almost ready.
Okay. All right. This is St. Augustine this evening. Bob, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks for everything you're doing on the beach and keeping track of the turtles. Tell them I said hello.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
St. Augustine this evening. We'll be right back tomorrow.